is what you're describing, is it something that somebody might arrive at in their ordinary waking?
Well, as with many things, it can be in some unguarded moment, just brushing your teeth. Suddenly the mind can recognize, oh, I call this a toothbrush. Oh, it's not really absolutely a toothbrush. I mean, this is the way that things can work. Sometimes if we're quite tired or we're just sort of not paying attention, we get distracted. So it's a kind of, in a way, a glitch in our habitual world-making and judging process. It's sort of like, if you remember vinyl records, if the needle skips. Those of us who remember vinyl records and needles. So it skips. It doesn't necessarily take place in the quiet of the meditation hall, which can do, obviously, and particularly, I would say, with the development of vipassana meditation, insight meditation, the effort is to clarify that quality of awareness. But from time to time, it can be in those sort of unbidden moments where, literally with the toothbrush, suddenly, this is not a toothbrush. Oh. I mean, not that toothbrushes are sacred, but I'm just using a random example.
Like a vivid sense.
Yeah, just suddenly the mind just frames things in a different way, or its usual world creation glitches. Just feeling the weight of your body on the ground, suddenly that feeling of being pulled to the earth. It's like, oh, this is the feeling of weight. Oh, what's that? The usual habitual processes are just interrupted. I'm not praising distraction per se, but often it's in those sort of unbidden moments, like the famous moment of Venerable Ananda's enlightenment is when he gives up on the meditation. He thinks, oh, well, I've been up all night trying to realize full and complete enlightenment so I can go to the big meeting today. The first council was about to happen, and he was told by Mahakasapa he couldn't come unless he was an arahant. No pressure. And the expectation was he was going to recite all the Buddha's teachings, but he was, quote-unquote, only an anagami. So he stayed up all night doing sitting and walking meditation, trying to realize complete enlightenment so that he could meet the requirement to come to the meeting. And he sees the dawn coming, the sky is getting lighter, and then he has this train of thought, oh, well, you know, I've been working the hardest I can all night long. I haven't realized the end of suffering. And putting words into his mouth, it's going to be a long day, I might as well take a rest. So it said that as he gave up on the meditation, and as he sat down on the platform, the bench, after his feet left the ground and before his head met the pillow, he realized full and complete enlightenment. So it's when he gave up the practice, also gave up the formal meditation, that was the moment of the great breakthrough. So he earned the recognition of being the one person to be enlightened outside of the four postures. He wasn't sitting, standing, walking, or lying down. So that shift of view, and it depends what we make of it. If we don't have a framework for that, it can just be something that we think we're going crazy or we're freaking out. Oh, one example that people mentioned from time to time is seeing your face in a mirror and it's not your face. It's like it's nobody else's face, but the sense of that being me suddenly sort of glitches, and it's like, oh, this which is aware of that face hasn't got a face. If that's not me, what am I? So without a framework of Buddha Dhamma or Dhamma teachings, then that can be a real freak out, and it's like, I'm going crazy, or I put the kettle on, or see the doctor. But if there's a framework for recognizing, oh, I only call that my face because of conditioning, but how could the quality of awareness have any shape or form? Awareness doesn't have a face, never did. Oh, of course. But if we don't have a framework or a context for that, there can be a serious freak out. Don't want to deal with that, so find some help, some psychological help, or you find a distraction or something to get away from that. It's paying attention to those moments and being ready to learn from them. Then it helps to reveal and underscore the fabricated nature of perception, that it's not anything absolute or permanent. So that's why I like to recommend, as I often have done, books like The Man Who Mistook His Wife for a Hat by Oliver Sacks, and other books by him. He's a neurologist, a neuroscientist, a psychiatrist. So collections of different pathologies that people experience. So it's a kind of popular science book, but by the time you get to the end of the book, you really don't trust perception. You realize, oh, this is really very delicately fabricated and held together, and it can glitch in all sorts of different ways. So that habit of taking the world of our sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, and thoughts as being absolutely real, it's like, oh, well, that's not reliable. This is fabricated and formed. These are not something to believe in or to follow. It's a different angle of approach. I got a bit of a scientific bent, but I find shifts the view that you are the world that you think you're in. Another example is Ajahn Kurunadamo, to go back to the States. He is completely red-green colorblind. So when you say, this is red, he said, if you say so. You know, they are different shades of sepia, of brown. And I said, well, how did you learn to drive the traffic lights? And he said, they're always in the same order. Yeah. But he can't see the difference of the color. So, is this really red? Or is it red because of the conditioning of our particular forms of eyesight, assuming that you're not colorblind? Just bearing that in mind. Oh, my mind is creating redness and greenness and so on. It's not intrinsically absolutely there. It's because of the receptivity of these sense organs can pick that up. His can't. So every so often we'd have to explain, oh, this is a really nice flower arrangement. Yeah, if you say so. When he was a layman, he purchased a Honda Civic that he thought was quite a subtle, kind of modest shade. He's a very humble guy. He's not a flashy kind of a person at all. And his partner didn't tell him that it was electric green. He just kind of... That's what partners are for, you know. So he was driving this kind of...
It's very flattering.
Very wow, kind of wowish colour, like electric, kind of fluorescent green Honda Civic around. And that became the Abhayagiri Monastery car for a while. That was our first car, was Anagarika Tom, as he was in Anagarika Tom's Honda. We'd had it for a while, and I asked him, so what made you buy a car like this? And he said, well... Bill didn't tell me that it was electric green. I thought it was a very modest colour. So I feel it's useful to contemplate those things, that the mind creates the world in a particular form that we experience it. It's not absolutely intrinsically there.